Hello, my name is Jacob James, and this is the project I've been working on for the last year under the guidance of Dr. Christian Nansen, and we're actually looking at controlling these larger black flower beetles with entomopathogenic nematodes. Before I get into it, I need to tell you a little bit about the agroecological landscape where I come from. We're talking about the 23 counties centered around Lubbock, Texas in the northwest portion of the state. It is the largest contiguous cotton growing region in the world. It's very intensive agriculture, very monoculture. This is a typical scene right here. And all this cotton production produces gin trash, which you can see in the lower picture, just huge piles of it everywhere. This gin trash actually refers to the bracts, stems, leaves, basically any part of the plant that isn't the actual cotton lint that is removed during the ginning process. It's basically thrown behind the gin, piled up in a remote location. There's nothing economical to do with it, and it's illegal to burn from EPA regulations. The larger black flower beetle actually show a natural affinity for these piles, and these piles are very conducive for their reproduction. The problem with this is that these beetles can emerge from these gin trash piles for reasons which we don't yet fully know. They can emerge in the millions. It looks about like ladybug emergence in some places of the world. They can cover homes, businesses, schools. They're just a nuisance pest, but they invade. And when they do this, mostly in homes, the liability falls on the cotton gin owner or the owner of the gin trash pile to have the beetle eradicated. Our own studies have shown that just 20 of these beetles can actually multiply into hundreds or even thousands within just a few weeks. So, like I said, these piles are very, very conducive to their reproduction. And above all, there is no product registered for application in gin trash piles, nor will there probably ever be because of the size of the market. And it's not very economical to go through the labeling process of a chemical. There have been some studies that have tried diatomaceous earth, have tried some chemicals, but everything has failed. So we have this problem, it's a small problem, and no solution for it. What we're possibly looking at are entomopathogenic nematodes within these gin trash piles. We have found in an earlier paper that these larger black flower beetle larvae actually have an affinity to the soil environment within this gin trash pile, particularly to an area of low soil moisture. The area of interest that we're looking at is this right here. This is the gin trash piled on the soil surface right here. This is the area we're believing that the larger black flower beetle larvae will actually live out most of their life cycle. And this is the area we also believe that entomopathogenic nematodes can possibly come into contact with them in the soil right here. We also believe that they can cause a continuous infection cycle within these piles, and control can last indefinitely. We're honestly not sure on how long the soil persistence of these nematodes is. It might take several applications. That's future research, though. So a solution would be to maybe pre-inoculate the soil, inoculate within the season with these entomopathogenic nematodes. The specific species we're looking at right now are the Steinonema carpocapsae. They're well known. They're commercially available. You heard a presentation about them earlier today. And they're also very easy to rear on a number of insect species. We actually rear them on wax moth larvae. And we would like to thank Dr. Elson Shields from Cornell University for supplying us with the academic strains of these nematodes versus the commercial strains. They're known to be a little bit more active and more persistent within the soil. Our research objectives, we were totally in the lab. This is initial phase of everything. But we want to assess the efficacy of the S. carpocapsae as a control agent of the larger black flower beetle at that soil interface layer I showed you earlier. We looked at several factors. We looked at food availability, which is actually that food pellet within the petri dish right there. It's a mixture of 50% glycerin, 50% cornmeal, just to provide some moisture and some food for these larger black flower beetles in these petri dishes. We looked at the soil moisture level within this petri dish. We looked at the life stage of the larger black flower beetle, both late instar larvae and adult larger black flower beetle. We looked at infective juvenile nematode, or IJ, density within this petri dish, and we also looked at the larger black flower beetle density. We looked at these four variables in combination, and the adults and larvae experiments were actually run separately. For our food rates, we simply had food and no food, that pellet and without one. We had soil moisture levels of 0, 7, and 14%. We had an effective juvenile or IJ treatment of 0, 250, and 1,000 IJs per petri dish, and larger black flower beetle densities of both 1 and 5 adults and larvae per petri dish. And there were 12 reps of each, and it totaled up to be something like 950 petri dishes. Our results, these are the one larger black flower beetle per petri dish. The larvae are to my right, the adults are to my left here. And what we found were that the two most important variables were both the water treatment level and the nematode or IJ treatment level. As you can see, there's kind of a stair-stepping pattern. As you increase in soil moisture, which is on this axis, and you increase in IJ treatment, which is on the y-axis, there's actually the increase to a point. Adults are somewhat the same way. They're not as responsive to soil moisture. On the five large black flower beetle per petri dish, we actually noticed the same with IJs and water, but we also noticed life stage. If you can look at the adult graph, you can find there's really not much of a pattern to their control. The larvae still look very similar to the one larvae per petri dish, but the adults, there's not really much of a pattern. So our conclusions are that what we expected, larger black flower beetle larvae, late instar larvae, are more susceptible to S. carbocapsae than larger black flower beetle adults are. And soil moisture is important. Higher levels of soil moisture in combination with increased nematode density, that stair-stepping pattern on either side of that graph I was talking about, led to more effective control of the larger black flower beetle. Some future research we'd like to do. There's many different species of entomopathogenic nematodes. They have different soil persistence levels. They inhabit different areas within the soil. So we'd like to test different species in the same manner, and we'd also like to use combinations of different species. The effect of soil types other than a sandy loam, which is what we used, is also very important for a soil-borne pathogen. Application methods are also big. Depending on soil persistence, these gin trash piles might have to be treated 3 or 4 times a season. So it's very important to figure out the logistics of actually applying to these piles, which can rise 30 or 40 feet off the ground. They can be pretty massive. And the temporal persistence of nematodes, which goes along with that within the soil, and of course effects on non-target arthropods in ply lakes, in soils, things like that. We would also, if this program does have any promise, we'd also like to eventually hand it over to 4-H and FFA programs in the region to use as a community outreach and as potential fundraisers. They could be the ones to rear these nematodes, show the actual gin owners how to apply them, and they could use this as a fundraiser. Oops. Oh, and high schools, area high school science programs, this is a very good biological control model. We would hope that it would actually get some high schoolers more interested in biology and entomology. Some acknowledgments, we'd like to thank Plains Cotton Growers, Cotton Inc., and Texas Cotton Ginners Association for funding on this project or assistance in finding funding. Dr. Elson Shields, again, for providing us with nematode species, and Dr. Patrick Porter of the Texas AgriLife Extension for his assistance in this project. And I'll take questions now. Yes?
I don't really know that much about cotton gin trash, but why can't you burn it, and do they just leave it there to degrade?
Yes, it's actually an EPA regulation that was passed in the early 70s that it cannot be burnt anymore. And it's not economical to do anything with. It costs more to move it than to do anything. So they are left, and in 2 or 3 years, they will rot to the ground. But until then, they are a very good breeding ground for this insect. Yes?
Are the beetles in any way important for speeding the decomposition of the pile?
The question was, are the beetles important in decomposing the pile? We're not sure because there haven't been a whole lot of biological assays performed on this beetle. We are not even sure what they eat within the pile. They're suspected to be fungal feeders, but we're not entirely sure on that. Yes?
Any plans to carry this experiment experiments out in the field. These were all lab assays, correct?
Yes. The question was, are we going to carry these experiments into the field? Absolutely. This is a preliminary stage, and like I said, we'd like to do a few other preliminary experiments with other species. But like I said, there's not a lack of gin trash piles or ginners willing to get rid of this problem. So carrying it out into the field is the next logical step. Yes. Yes.
In a lot of areas where cotton is grown, there's also poultry farms and aquaculture. Have you thought about collecting the beetles and feeding them either to chickens or to fish?
Collecting them is actually a challenge. It's something we have problems with. That one slide where I showed you the cotton gin trash pile in the area of interest where the beetles actually inhabit, that gin trash pile can be maybe 40 or 50 feet high. So collecting these things, that's also a huge logistical problem. Anything else? Yes.
You talked about application method and persistence. What would be a logistical way to apply IJs into a pile like that when it's already established?
Okay, the question was, how would we logistically apply the IJs to an established gin trash pile? One idea we've had is maybe a drip type system, some kind of pipe or hose. You could apply them almost on demand when trapping suggested that the population was again rising. So it would be basically run on the ground before the pile was established. Yes, back here.
Oh, what about just dispersing the cotton gin residue piles?
Well, space is an issue. There are some cotton gins that border cities, so they have their own maybe 20-acre lot or so. They're really the only place they have to go with these piles are up. They produce massive, massive amounts of this gin trash. Yes?
And then what about using it as something else, not necessarily feed, but other sorts of ways that would fall in
the way? Okay. It's just not economical. It's so heavy and bulky, and the nutrient content isn't really enough to warrant moving it around very far to fields to apply as a fertilizer or anything like that.
But it's being used for compost. I mean, they use it as a compost supplement, but the economics of it are just not there.
Alrighty. Thank you.